So, going on with different topics of discussion, Satchidananda Prabhu, is he also, is he going to come? He's at home, or what is it? All right, we were talking last semester about farm projects, and these are practical things. Preaching to people and asking to be Krishna conscious, but they're finding it difficult to be Krishna conscious because of their whole lifestyle is just living with economies. So farm project is very important. It's a big project, big thing to get it together. Oh, what happened to my pen? I've got it. Okay. But if we can do that, that will give a tremendous opportunity for many people. Prabhupada said millions. People will join our farm projects in their millions. Now another or practical consideration for that is that some people, we want young men to join us or to take up Krishna consciousness full time as preachers. Young men and old men. Old men whose family life is finished and young men whose family life didn't start. It doesn't have to start. But even if young men do become, they can become brahmacharis for some time, and then afterwards they can also go to family life. There are two kinds of brahmacharis. One is traditional, one is naishtik. One who is naishtik brahmachari, they live as brahmacharis and from young age, and later on they may make the sankalpa, they take the vow not to marry at all. Another kind is upakurvana, so it's good that we can suggest to people that, to young men, that, well, even if you want to marry later, at least spend some time living in the temple, because the experience and the training that you'll get is very valuable. So that's one thing I want to discuss, but I don't want to discuss it with this big group. With a smaller group, we can discuss the logistics of having young men join our temples, because it's often a little messy in as much as there are very few cases of family, friends, the society, friendship and love, the shackles of material lives. There are very few cases of parents agreeing that their sons should join our temples. And you might have noticed a few cases of them not being very favorable at all. In fact, they're almost all like that. So it's often a messy job. Getting a messy means it's often a lot of hassle. We'd better discuss that in a smaller group. How to go about this. What to do. How to save young men who are sincere to join the Krishna conscious movement, dedicate their lives to Krishna. How to extricate them from the clutches of family life. So that's one thing, and then the other thing is older men who have already finished with family life, how to extricate them from the clutches of family life also. because often they remain, they're dead bodies, but they could be serving Krishna on a full-time basis, but often in many cases they remain attached to their home lives. So that's we should encourage also all the men whose children are grown up and married and they have no particular reason to remain at home, but especially when they get more old, then they could wish, when at the age when, of course death can come at any time, but especially once one is past 60, it can just, you know, and it's common. The dying age has begun. There's no dying age, any age is dying age. It's more common after about, what, 60, 65 maybe? Like that. And then we can expect them to go anytime. It's not surprising. If a man of 30 has a heart attack and dies, it's somewhat surprising. After the age of 60, then anytime, stroke or whatever, just people. So that after that age, we should encourage people. Unless you're very fully engaged in some local preaching service or temple service, better you go to Vrindavan, Dwarka, Mayapur and live in the Dham and get away from, remain attached to your home and family. Come out. Are you going to shave me today? You ready for that? Were you told? You were told, okay. So actually I think I'll finish at 12:45 and then can go for shaving. Okay. Anyone else for shaving? It's cold in Delhi, better to do it here. Anyway, who is there? Harinam Ananda, he should also get shaved up. Better. Yourself also today. Okay, that's a specialized topic which we can discuss just a smaller group afterwards. Afterwards means maybe this afternoon. Satyadananda people should be here also because he's also involved in the young men's liberation movement. I'm sure he'll have some comments to make. So you could ask later at least when he comes. Well, we'll see how this goes on. Actually, I should be ready to talk about this fairly soon. That will be, like I say, in a smaller group, so we could, you could call him and ask him to come. Then, the other thing is, apart from getting men to engage as full-time preachers, that would be a fairly small number. But then, practically speaking, most people do get married, and those who have a tendency to do so, we may also encourage them in that way, because that may be required for them, for the remaining stable in Krishna consciousness, that most people may require to be married. And definitely all young girls should be encouraged to marry, which is not such an easy thing because often the parents don't want the girls to be devotees, or even then there are so many, so it's not even if devotees marry, it's not only even if the boy and girl are both Krishna conscious, still there are so many social considerations about their age and their caste, if they're concerned about caste, and usually they still are, and their educational qualification, what, so many things. At least the parents will have so many different expectations. So it, when young men and women take to Krishna consciousness, then it, to help to maintain them in Krishna consciousness, is actually needed that some, better that all the grihasthas do it, that they arrange that, that the devotees can, the young men and women, they marry with devotees. If there's caste consideration and all these kind of things, then you have to see maybe in another city or something like that. If they have to, if the Marwari has to marry Marwari and Bengali has to marry a Bengali, and, which it's usually, it's often like that, and it's usually better like that too, because if just like yesterday one couple came to see me, he's Bengali and she's Gujarati, so when after night she has to learn Gujarati, she has to learn Bengali, which isn't impossible, but it's easier if they, and she has to learn to cook Bengali style and all these things. So that is required. Some of the older grihasthas, they have to take charge of that in each place. Who's doing that in Salem? Didn't think about that, because you're all brahmacharis, but it's actually required.
His grandfather fell down, so he's taken to hospital.
Oh, I see. He won't be able to come now.
He won't be able to come.
Okay. Yeah, family life is entangled. Of course, it could be that a brahmachari fell down and then the brahmacharis have to take him also. Fell down means physically. I'm talking about him. Yeah, but when I go to South India, then I'll have more, like, we can discuss all these things also. We've talked about it before, but it's actually required. Like we're making so much effort preaching, and people take interest in Krishna consciousness, and then they take it up. But unless, in most cases, unless we see that they're properly situated, often it's young people coming like this, unless we see they're properly situated, then it's very difficult for them to maintain their Krishna consciousness. Even if they very much want to do so. So, and then also some effort is required into help people in their family life, because often they take to Krishna consciousness, it may be that their wife doesn't like it, or their wife takes to it and then the husband doesn't like it. A lot of effort has to go into helping devotees on their social side either, because if they're not stable on their social side, then it's difficult for them to maintain their Krishna consciousness. And realistically speaking, most people who take to Krishna consciousness are not very strong. It requires a lot of strength to come out of mind. So realistically speaking, even traditionally there is the, and Prabhupada very much emphasizes this varna ashram to help people to be steadily or stably situated in their family life and their social life, and this platform make progress in Krishna consciousness, because without that, most people don't have the mood of complete vairagya that they're ready to just leave all of that and fully surrender to Krishna. So realistically speaking, if we're going to bring people into Krishna consciousness, the farm project is one thing, and maybe that's something which is on, that's, we can't visualize that right now, although we should start to do so, but realistically speaking, all around us we're preaching to people, and they need this kind of help. Family comes. Of course, some families of the husband and wife are both in Krishna consciousness, even the in-laws, and then there's no problem like that. But in many cases, there is a problem, even if not a major problem. Even if the other, one partner is fully interested in Krishna consciousness and the other isn't, but they're just neutral. But then, how to help bring them in? All these things we have to see too. One thing we should. If by the force of the parents or whatever, which often happens, they marry, someone's becoming interested in Krishna consciousness, and by force they marry them to someone they know is not at all interested in Krishna consciousness, because they want to break their Krishna consciousness like that. So it's a disaster. So by all means we should try to avoid this, because once someone marries a non-devotee, it makes it very, very difficult for them to practice Krishna consciousness. The difficulty in it. Yeah, I mean, there are cases recently in Hyderabad, one of my disciples married someone who's, she said she'd take it up, but she didn't. She's not interested. So it makes it very difficult for him, and his parents are also not interested, so they're like supporting her. And oh, he's very strong in his own determination, but it means he's just going to have to live with that struggle. And something might change, but at the present time there's no sign of anything changing, and it's, you know, he's at odds with the rest of the family members. So it becomes very difficult. It would be better if we could have arrangements by which young men who are devotees who want to marry young ladies who are in Krishna consciousness. Even then, they might not get on very well together. But at least, on one principle of that we want to be Krishna conscious, at least that's the. And then whatever else may happen, well, that's your luck. You don't know what it's going to be like after marriage. You know, the husband and wife might get on well together, they might not, but at least if they're both agreed on Krishna consciousness, at least it's better than not being agreed on Krishna consciousness. One other. Yeah, I actually wanted to go into discussion mode fairly soon. I saw yesterday about education, and let's emphasize that again, that we should, just like these cell programs we have here, we could have two levels, like for newcomers and then for devotees already coming more regularly, who've had the basic training, then it would be good to have systematic Bhakti Shastri courses. How are you conducting the cell program now? I think it's still going on in more or less the same way. The idea is that the cell is supposed to divide and grow bigger, but I think the cell is it's a dormant, it's not growing bigger very quickly, is it? I'm talking about here in Baroda. Yeah, so why don't you could take up this Bhakti Shastri course and do that. That would be better, isn't it? That's very important. If in all these different places, Baroda, Vidyanagar, Salem, where devotees are coming regularly, so actually what happens is after some time they don't feel to come to the Gita class or whatever, because they think, well, it's all the same. Unless there's a very entertaining or high-profile speaker. But it would be good to have these systematic Bhakti Shastri courses for those who are coming regularly, so that they can systematically study, they can get their certificate, and they can get systematic understanding of Krishna consciousness. So you want to write that down? Oh, Rupa Goswami translation. Acha.
Abhi tak computer mein typing ho raha
hai. Aha. Nahi, aap bhi translate kare wo Bhakti Shastri ka? Prashn
nahi
hota. Aap samjha hai na? Kaun se program? Kaun se program hai? Agar Bhakti Bridge program.
Ye Bhakti Shastri aap अभी कंप्यूटर फिटिंग कर रहे हैं, तो बाद में करेंगे दो महीने बाद.
तो अच्छा होगा उसको शुरू करवाना. Every temple, in a sense. So those who are coming regularly, they should take this Bhakti Shastri course. And for the devotees in the temple also.
Hmm?
You're going to a temple?
I don't see many
images. In Pune temple, they stopped the whole temple for 3 months. And they just did Bhakti Shastri. They just turned it into a school. They had the regular programs, but Srimad Bhagavatam class, but just very tight schedule. And then they freed up as many devotees as they could, and they just turned the whole temple into a school for 3 months and had Bhakti Shastri class. They other programs, you might say, suffered, but then the devotees, they got a very thorough training. You could also do that. It's Shreyas and Prayas. Immediately you can do so many things, but in the long run, the devotees, they need to have good, solid basis, and they'll appreciate that. And people will like to join also if they see that they're getting good education in Krishna consciousness. If it's just, you know, you either pick up a briefcase or a broom according to your ability, and either you're sweeping the floor or you're taking out a briefcase for a collection, that's all. People may not be so enthusiastic to join. Many times people say that I used to read more before I joined the temple. I had more opportunity. That shouldn't be, actually. You're not sending out. Sending should be the people who join that become knowledgeable in Shastra. Of course, there are so many things to do. But you may think it's more practical that we just push everyone into service, but actually in the long term it's not practical either, because in most cases they don't stay, or even if they do stay, they don't develop properly if they don't have a good background in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, you can put it on your list of things to discuss. We're going to discuss, we can move into the discussion fairly soon. Sorry, jumping around here a bit. Well, I'm just going to, you know, just a few other points. Family stability. We should preach this. Don't encourage. It's easy to encourage divorce in many cases. It's very common now in India. In the name of bhakti, people want to get divorced, but we shouldn't encourage this. Prabhupada himself, as he said, I didn't like my wife. She wasn't inclined towards bhakti, but he still went through years and years of struggling to maintain a family that didn't in the slightest bit support him in his bhakti. So, we don't want to start encouraging divorce and all this. If at home the people they're not inclined to bhakti, then you just do quietly at home. You don't disturb them. If you have to suffer because of that, then just suffer, because there are so many cases in the history of India of both men, well, especially women, because sometimes the men would take sannyas if their family members didn't like it, but. But they just went on with their bhakti despite everything. Prabhupada's sister was a good example. She was, her husband, her father was fully a devotee, but somehow or other he married her to a non-devotee. And she had to cook fish for him every day. She was doing her stri dharma. But she did her own bhakti. She went on with that without complaining. So it's definitely, we don't want to encourage. Once you start, you say to some, oh, a special case, okay, you divorce. And then there'll then be another special case, another special case, another special case. And everyone will just take it as an excuse, and it'll make chaos. And in many cases, if the husband and wife, even if they're not doing so well together, they stay together, then it gets better somewhere or other, they adjust. And anyway, there's no divorce is just not allowed in Vedic culture. It's just not there. It's a modern invention which is very demoniac thing actually. It's totally because marriage is not just, it's done in a secret. It's a vivaha yagya. It's supposed to be sacred. It's not just that the dogs don't need vivaha yagya. Although some people do vivaha yagya for dogs also. Some stupid thing. Yeah, and creating the right mentality. I was saying yesterday, I'm not one of the greatest fans of the women's liberation movement. But then we should also see that our mothers, they may have cause for complaint also. Why they complain? They may have cause for complaint. Often I see in our temples in India and in the West that we say Mataji, but we don't always treat like that. Often you see they'll put out, just like they put out two mats and then all the men will sit on them. And you don't think, oh, the women, they also have to have a sitting place. Or the women are just squashed up at the back and the men don't think that maybe we should give them a little more space. Often I see this. So I would request you to all the men to consider these points also. It's less like we say mother cow and send her to the slaughterhouse. We don't actually slaughter, when she gets old we sell her. Because, you know, why? Because we don't care. So it's not just enough to say go mother, but there should actually be go raksha. So in the same way, it's not enough just to say mataji, but also they have to see that they're properly respected. These are just some small little things like that. Traditionally, women, their whole life is one of sacrifice. They sacrifice. Mothers are worshipped because they sacrifice everything for their family. They work hard and they cook and they clean and they just tolerate their oceans of love and this and that. So they're worshipped for these qualities. But we should remember that also. In Vedic culture, it's expected that women will have the qualities of shyness, submissiveness, and all these things. But they're also they're worshipped. They're given special position. So another point, another couple of points. Here's something else for you all to think about. And if you can put it into action, then there's a lot of mercy to be had by preaching in difficult situations or to people who are difficult to bring to Krishna consciousness. Now in India we're preaching, we're distributing our books, we're doing programs. But there's one large section of the population, and there are various sections of the population we hardly reach, like tribals we hardly reach. And maybe you should aim for the educated class first, although everyone can take to Krishna consciousness. But there is a large section of the population who, if we could make an impact in preaching to, that would be most glorious. There's about, I don't know exactly the numbers, maybe 120 million Muslims in this country. And there's no reason why, at least from the ontological point of view, there's no reason why they can't take to Krishna consciousness also, because they're also Krishna Das. socially, it's a difficult one. But actually, there are different sects of Muslims in Gujarat, those Ahmadiyyas and Borders, and they're actually not so tough like others. So maybe you can try and distribute books in those areas also. You have special mercy. Maybe you have to go to 100 Muslims to get one to even think of taking one. But if you get one to take, that will be something very wonderful. You have to consider how to present also. Maybe during Eid you could arrange some time Ramadan, you could arrange an iftar party or some vegetarian iftar party or something. I don't know. Don't tell them you're devotees, because they don't like to take prasadam. Somehow or other, I mean, there are Muslims who will take an interest, at least on an academic, professors, they may take an interest on an academic level. There are people who are interested. In Bahrain, once I was at a dentist and emergency dental treatment, there was an Arab who had he got his dental degree in London, and I didn't want to tell him I was a Hare Krishna devotee, so I said, I'm teaching Vedanta. He said, oh really, I'm very interested in that. So there is scope. Maybe in India, or maybe a little difficult, but if you can do so, anything you can do in this field will be very glorious. Certainly, Prabhupada will very much appreciate that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was especially inquiring from Haridas Thakur at how can we deliver these jovans who eat, they kill cows. He's talking about, of course that's a general term, but specifically in Bengal, jovan, yavan, that specifically means Muslim. So how can we deliver these Muslims? They kill cows and they're against Vedic culture. And Chaitanya, Haridas Thakur replied that if they hear the holy names, that will be for their tremendous benefit. So we can sometimes do Harinam through the Muslim areas also. But you have to see, because some Muslim areas are a little more high class and others less so. In Surat, there are some areas. In Surat, in general, the Muslims are quite mild, it seems, except when it comes to in some areas, yeah. So you have to see. Previously, there was no bad feeling of the Muslims towards ISKCON, especially because they used to see us as something different. We never used to have any problems with Rathiyatra or any such things, but I think. Even when there were times going through the Muslim area.
From 92 it was very normal.
Yeah. Anyway, if somehow you have to think, you know, how to do it somewhat cautiously, because it can be dangerous. And in times of tension, obviously when there are riots going on, at that time and just for some time after them, that you may not want to. It may be dangerous actually, but maybe more dangerous, but at other times, if you can think how to distribute books, maybe do Harinam, whatever you think how to do. If you can preach to Muslims. Now another thing is that there's a lot of field for preaching on the internet, by correspondence. So many people, they buy books and then they write letters. So there's a lot of preaching to do like that. You're doing your whole mail out going on. And then, just like we're here in Gujarat, actually, we should have some vision how to preach throughout the whole of Gujarat and how to make the whole of Gujarat Krishna conscious. We distribute so many books are being distributed here. So if there are interested people, then even if there's one person who's interested, we should send someone out, maybe 200 kilometers, whatever. We can invite them to come, or maybe go. Someone writes a letter, maybe we should go and see them, do some small program in their home. Have this kind of vision. When there's just like a businessman, when there's some opportunity, we'll take what, how to exploit it. Now the field is good, how to exploit that for business. So now we have our business of spreading Krishna consciousness. So how to develop that? If there's someone who's interested, we should go out to them and invite them to festivals and bring them in. And another thing is, we don't have to wait for sannyasis to come to organize various programs. In Vallabhidhivagana, there's house programs almost every day. Just two devotees from the temple are going out. But that can be done regularly in other places also. You can have Grihastha bhaktas, they can also give the lecture and everything. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be someone in Saffron. If we wait for someone in Saffron to come, then so many jivas, so many interested people may be not getting the Krishna consciousness they could be getting. So by correspondence, by going out and meeting people, Grihasthas also go out and preach. Okay, we can have broader discussion on various topics. I guess there's that particular one I wanted to discuss, the Young Men's Liberation Movement. But I don't want to discuss that with everyone, just a few temple leaders. It's not something to be discussed with everyone. How to extract gold from a filthy place. Then we could have some general discussion on various topics that I've brought up in the last, well, yesterday and today. Any point, there's so many topics I discussed here about book distribution, Prabhupada's book, distribution of Prabhupada's book, distribution of my books, farm projects. Oh, another thing, one more point, is that this is something a little revolutionary. Prabhupada many times suggested it. It's actually part of Indian culture until quite recently, and still going on, is, as Prabhupada said, there are always more women than men in society. As we'll find it in most communities, put your hand on your mouth, except with few exceptions, like the Punjabis, the Sikhs, they mostly have, maybe it's 50-50, or men more than women, slightly more. And then some men also, Prabhupada said, they take up renounced life, so that more, and then, but then again, all women are supposed to get married. So Prabhupada suggested, or the traditional Indian system of polygamy. So we might encourage also, if we see a man is going on in his family life, he's a responsible grihastha, to take responsibility for more than one wife. That's something to be discussed more among the grihasthas. But that's all, because otherwise, how are all these young women who are taking to Krishna consciousness, who's going to protect them? The traditional solution is that the solution to it, it's a social problem if women are not married, and it's a problem within our society if young ladies are taking to Krishna consciousness and they don't have any proper protector, husband, then the traditional solution is that men may have more than one wife. And that's still going on. Sometimes because a man, you know, he just due to some looseness in his behavior, he contacts another woman, and then in more responsible than to abandon one wife and divorce is to marry another one. Or sometimes if the wife he marries and she doesn't have any children or she doesn't have any male children, that's still considered a valid reason in many communities for a man to take another wife. But actually, traditionally you can take anyway. It doesn't have to be that the wife has no children or whatever. They can take one wife. They can support and they're responsible, and then they can do. Now there's, in our society, it's because Prabhupada said different things. Prabhupada is very much encouraging it, but he said we cannot allow it in our society. So what does that mean? On one hand, Prabhupada's encouraging polygamy, and then he said we can't encourage it in our society. Well, from what I understand by this, I understand it means that devotees who are married couples who are living in the temple community, the temple can't support. The temple is not a place for supporting large families, especially if they're by more than one wife. But if a man himself is earning money, and he's earning sufficiently, then he could, and actually Prabhupada said they should, take more than one wife. So that's something I'm going to start encouraging, because it is ordained by Shastra. Prabhupada said to do it, and as from what I can understand, it's only a misunderstanding of what Prabhupada said, that we shouldn't do it. They said, well, in America it's illegal. So then that's another reason Prabhupada said, well, we shouldn't do it within our society, which I understand to mean within the four walls, the literal institution. But then again, when Prabhupada was asked, he said, well, how can we do it? How can householders do it? It's illegal. Prabhupada said, you can say it's a girlfriend. That's it. He gave this, but you keep as a wife, you can have the ceremony, and if anyone asks you, you just say it's you don't legally register, that's all. If it's illegal. So Prabhupada even gave the solution like that. So that's something that should be considered. Generally the first wife doesn't like it if there's a second wife. But sometimes they do like it, because it's like they become like sisters or something, and then it's some company for them also. I was reading something in Africa, they were asking, in some communities in Africa it's still very common a man has six or seven wives. And they were asking, because they were saying, well, they were asking the women, don't you think, you know, that's not very nice for you to have more than co-wives? They said, no, I want co-wives, because, you know, otherwise they, we don't have, it's not so much company, and you see, they like it. They're used to it, that's their culture. So they have, it's like having some sisters at home, something like that. And they might fight among themselves, but everyone fights among themselves anyway, so. That's, you know, that's sometimes, not all the time. It's just like, you know, men fight among themselves also, but that doesn't mean we don't associate with anyone. We go on with life. So that is what might be considered a somewhat revolutionary suggestion, but as far as I see, it's a practical solution, because we're seeing practically that when it's a question of getting devotees married, that the problem is usually not so much for the men's side as for the women's side, because there are more, and in our in the community of devotees that we're preaching among, it seems that there are always more young women coming than men who do want to marry. So that's it. Prabhupada himself gave this. I'm not saying anything new. It just seems to be new because it hasn't been encouraged in our society, although Prabhupada himself encouraged it. So that's one other point. Hare Krishna. Yeah, anyone here has any points for discussion? Yeah.
So about this last point, I also heard about Prabhupada that one disciple approached him and he asked about this polygon. So Prabhupada, he answered like, first he agreed, and then next day he told him, yes, but we cannot look because of the society.
Yeah. Because the people will criticize. But then after that, Prabhupada again said, if we see the chronology, Prabhupada gave the solution that you keep as a girlfriend. That which Prabhupada said we can't do because people will criticize, because it's illegal. That wasn't the last Prabhupada, that wasn't Prabhupada's last word on it. And in India, certainly, it's still quite socially acceptable. It's, you see, the whole thing is ridiculous. That comes up in that Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life book in the discussion with Rasaraj people. That they're very much against, in the Western countries, and in India now, many people say, they're very much against child marriage. They say a 13-year-old girl, it's very wrong she should be married. But it's quite normal that 13, 14-year-old girls are pregnant with abortion, getting abortions or having children. So young unmarried mothers, that's quite common and normal. But that girls should be married and have a protector and a husband, that's very bad. What a nonsense society. It's just ridiculous. Abortions for unmarried 14-year-old girls, that's normal, that's okay. But marriage, no. It's insane. The whole values of the society are so warped. Warped, you know that word means? It means twisted out of shape. Then, anything else?
Apart from that, we have millions of temples in India. So we don't need to build any more temples.
Mm.
We only need to distribute his books and do the most important service.
Yeah.
We see a trend in our society that in every place they are building a temple.
Well, Prabhupada said that, but Prabhupada said that there's no need to build so many temples in India. He said, if we build a few temples, now we should concentrate on building, on distributing books. But then again, Prabhupada, whenever there was a many times, even after saying that, he wrote that quite, when was that he wrote that? It was quite early, if you say. Yeah, 72, and a lot happened after 72. So Prabhupada opened many temples in India after that. When they were all, some places he turned down, because he said if people offered some temple or land in a small place in India, sometimes he turned it down and said, we don't have manpower. But then when in Hyderabad, land was offered in the center of the city, he took it. In Bhubaneswar, of course, these are important cities. In Bhubaneswar, land was offered in which was just an open site at the time, but it was slated to become the new city, which it has become. Prabhupada took it. So it wasn't, and Prabhupada also said that we want to open millions of temples all over the world. He said we want to open a temple in every town and village. So Prabhupada wasn't intrinsically against opening temples, just a matter of strategy, seeing what's the best way to spread Krishna consciousness, that's all. Well, it depends a lot on the mood of the, on how it's done also. But building temples is often a very good way to distribute books also. You can distribute so many books right from the temple. That may be, but it's not that we're against building temples or having temples. We have to see in each situation what's practical, what's the best thing to do. I think we can't make a general rule that we shouldn't build temples.
Men first and then we build temples. Now
generally, yeah, it's not a good idea to build a building and then you have to fill it up with people who are maybe not the best people to fill it up.
Every everywhere, you know, mostly this is happening.
Mostly, yeah, but this is the kind of issue that should be taken to the ICC. It's not a, for us to, we can't change, we're not in a position here to change the whole course of ISKCON India or ISKCON the world, but I'm just talking about what we can affect among ourselves here.
Just to continue this, we sit here in Baroda, like example is, we have a building and many people come in. So if we take an opportunity, like we started a book table program and many young students also, they have with this, so it's good field for Krishna, many people are taking books.
Definitely the whole presence of ISKCON, I mean, the presence of ISKCON is, it changed the very status or the position of ISKCON within Baroda changed on Janmashtami Day 2000, what year is it? 2000 or 1999? Which year was it? 1999. It was overnight. From the, or just before the temple's opening, some momentum was building up, but then on Janmashtami Day, the deities were installed, new temple opened, and practically overnight, it went from a basement operation to a full-fledged temple, which is the most popular temple in Baroda, and it's very prestigious. ISKCON was really established in Baroda on that day. The temple definitely makes a difference. Temples are supposed to be for the public and for neophyte devotees, which constitutes most of the people. So there's a question of quality and quantity, but definitely temples are for making a public, for giving a general impression of Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada said, we're preaching on two levels. We're preaching like among the devotees to make them very, I want to make them very strong. And then there's a, actually Prabhupada said for his book distribution, one thing is for the devotees, that they, some people will read them and who are very sincere and they'll become very strong. And then there's, what was it, Prabhupada's preaching mission in general, yeah. And then there's the general impression, to give a general idea of Krishna consciousness to as many people as possible. Some opportunity, some people are not very interested, but at least they'll come and they'll see the Rath Yatra once a year or something like this. That's a great benefit for them. We can't expect everyone to come up to the highest level. So we should understand that also. There's a question of quality and quantity, which we always have to bear in mind. There's a, in the Lilamrita, Prabhupada Lilamrita, it's described that Prabhupada visited two of, before Prabhupada even had land in Mayapur. So he visited two of his godbrothers in Navadvip, two of his godbrothers' mouths. One was the mouth of Keshav Maharaj, who had already passed away by that time. That's now dominated, Devananda Gauriwala, that's now dominated by the Acharya is Vaman Maharaj, but the most famous preacher from that mouth is Bhaktivedanta Narayan Maharaj. So actually, first of all, they went to Sridhar Maharaj's mouth and they saw there's not very few devotees, but they're very seriously engaged in bhajan and very learned in shastra, like very good behavior. And then they went to Devananda Gauriwala. But this is a generalization, of course. So they had many brahmacharis and sannyasis, but it's about a certain mat in Navadvip. Yeah, I was told that every brahmachari there has his didi. Didi means sister, and it's a euphemism for girlfriend. So they had many followers, but not a very high standard. Whereas the other mat, they had not many followers, but a very high standard. So then one of the devotees with Prabhupada asked Prabhupada, said, I see in one place there's more quantity and the other there's more quality. So which should we emphasize on? And Prabhupada said, both. He didn't choose one or the other. No, both. Definitely, if we go for quantity, then quality will suffer. If we go for quality, quantity will suffer. So what's the solution? There is no solution. But we ourselves should become sincere servants of the Lord and try to, within our capacity, help others to come up. Try to help everyone come up as much as they can, including ourselves. and recognize also that there will be different levels. Not everyone is going to be a, you know, Maha Bhagavat, Ashtatara Sata Sri Avadhut Paramahamsa. We have to reckon many people, they'll come to, for them coming to the temple, giving a donation, taking some prasad, and many won't. We try to bring people beyond that, but we also have to recognize that there are many people who, if they do that, that's very beneficial for them. Anyone who sees the Lord in arati is very beneficial. They appreciate the beautiful dressing, brightness. So. Although the temples are headache to run on, and often the institutional problems, they may give us a headache, but there it's very beneficial for people in general, which is why acharyas have established mats. They don't need them for themselves. They've established mandirs. Acharyas, they don't need these big temples, but they establish them for the benefit of the of devotees and for the general public. But I also appreciate it. People first, project second. It's a good formula. We should put more emphasis on people. Projects are also required. But the emphasis should be, the aim of the project is to help people come up in Krishna consciousness. So the real wealth of the temple is not how many lakhs or crores of rupees are passing through it, or how many big people come to visit. But the real wealth of the temple is the real decoration of the temple are the beautiful devotees, are the people who are coming up in Krishna consciousness. People first. Make people Krishna conscious. All the facilities are meant for that only.
For example, in Mohi temple, how can the people come every day? Practically, there is no street, nobody is going to them.
Right, yeah. Just yesterday I was introduced to some devotees who have taken it up in Vallabhadrinagar temple. They've made it their service, or they've been given that service, to meet people who are coming in. In Bombay they were doing that for some time in Juhu, getting people to chant and this and that. Alright, well anyway, there's no need to particularly highlight the faults of Juhu temple, whatever. But we can see in each, definitely the temples there, but there's good facility for preaching. Prabhupada even said to Jagjaga Maharaj, it's interesting, he said to Jagjaga Maharaj of all people, he also told Jagjaga Maharaj to travel and preach, but he also, one thing he said is that you don't have to go anywhere, you can just stay in Mayapur and preach, because so many people are coming to you. But then he also told you, you could also travel all over the world. So. But it is a point that so many people come to our temples that we're talking about going 300 kilometers to meet people, but it's also a fact that we don't tap the full resources of the people coming to our temples. So I think you're doing that in Surat, isn't it, also? That you have a book table and people are coming and
reading the address.
You're taking their address, yeah.
We
are
not yet contacted. We have so many addresses now.
Right, yeah. So that's good. And if keeping up with all the people that come, I mean, if we want to individually preach to everyone to come, that's also not possible. We have to be realistic also. We can have preaching right at the temple. That's a very good program. Just like you have that Pradarshini in ISKCON Surat. So you could take groups around, and then maybe on days like Sunday or Saturday when many people are coming, then every half an hour you have a group and you take them and you explain what is, and in other words you preach to them, this is this and this is that, this is Krishna Janma Leela, Janma Karma Chame Devyami. You can take them around and they'll appreciate it. They'll learn something. And at the end you sell like a Bhagavad Gita. Just wait a minute.
Third project we had,
2 months ago, you had a spiritual
form or spiritual questionnaire.
Spiritual
questionnaire. SQ, like I ask
SQ.
And we were
distributing questions.
Spiritual questions. SQ. For my mind, there were 10 questions, multiple choices.
I think we should be a little careful in our choice of words, because your spiritual ability is not measured by the ability to answer questions.
Yeah, it's just like we found it really effective in meeting people and speaking to them for a long time.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have to be careful, because it's just like you were saying yesterday, food for life. From the beginning, it gives the wrong impression of what we're supposed to be doing. It's better to present a proper picture of Krishna consciousness from the beginning. It may be a good medium to attract people, but then it attracts them immediately, giving them a wrong idea that you're just like we had this debating competition in the year when there was the 1996. I didn't like that, because it's the ability to debate. It's specifically stated to find in our Acharya's writings that the ability to debate has got nothing to do with one's in fact, this debating and argumentative attitude is actually considered an obstacle to advancement in Krishna consciousness. So ISKCON organized these debating contests in which people were standing up and talking about Vivekananda. I just don't see how it served the purpose of Krishna consciousness. And then it gives the impression that we are just another eclectic Hindu society where you can come to an ISKCON center and talk about Vivekananda and everything's okay, you know, because it's all one. So we should be careful. Prabhupada, even competitions, this kind of crosswords Prabhupada didn't even like, because he said he didn't like competition. We have Bhagavad Gita competitions, and it's very good to get people because they're in this competitive mode, but actually Prabhupada, he specifically stated that he didn't want this, because it's Bhagavad Gita is traditionally never studied as a competition. It's studied for our spiritual uplift, because Bhagavad Gita is to be studied with which mood? Shishya Steham Shadivam Tram Prapanna. Not to show I know more than you. It's absolutely the wrong attitude for studying Bhagavad Gita. So sorry I cut you out, and it may have seemed very successful, but the success is in what? Bringing people in and they take an interest, but how? At which point are we going to train them that showing yourself off to be better at answering questions than others and being very intelligent is the wrong attitude? Now you have to change your attitude. At which point do we tell them that? If we start off by making them a prize winner, or you're the most intelligent, at which point do we tell them actually we were just cheating you? And this is a wrong attitude to spiritual life. You start off in the wrong way. So again, this is something which I'm saying, the whole of ISKCON is doing this. And I'm saying, don't do it. But at least I can say among my disciples. I just don't see how it brings in the right. And even people may take interest and they may become initiated and all this and that. But if they have the feeling that, you know, well, I'm the prize winner in the contest and I know more Bhagavad Gita than you. Actually, there was a contest like this even when Prabhupada was present. It was called the Gita Bowl, because there was a Gita Bowl, no, was it some? Yeah, Bowl, and not B-O-L like in Hindi, but Bowl, B-O-W-L, because there's, in America they have Super Bowl, I think there's baseball or something. So they in the temples they made, then they had on TV University Bowl, which is taken, it's based on the idea of Super Bowl, in which they answer, people have come from the universities and ask them questions like, you know, tell what is pi up to 20 digits or something. They press the button and they say whatever it is, or, you know, what is the capital of the Seychelles Islands? And they press their button and you have to see who's the most... It's like a knowledge quiz. So they had this in the temples they started Gita Bowl competition to see who's the sharpest in answering questions on the Gita. When Prabhupada heard about it, he immediately stopped it. He said, this is bogus. So we find that devotees, they liked it, and it encouraged them to study Gita, but Prabhupada didn't like it. And so we find that we have these competitions and this kind of thing, and it encourages people to study Gita, but we can see Prabhupada didn't like it, and I can understand why, because it's the wrong attitude to study Bhagavad Gita. It's not something, you know, to be eaten and swallowed and digested. It's not like a book you pick up and you study and you get your bhakti. Of course, we have bhakti shastri courses, but it's not supposed to be a competition. It's for our own purification. So that's another unpopular thing that I said, which probably, anyway, it's going to go on. It will go on. But I don't know actually if it's conducive to bhakti. If one thinks, I have a very high spiritual quotient. The high spiritual quotient that's actually judged by how much we think ourselves very fallen. Trinadapi sunichena. But I've got the highest spiritual. I can answer more questions. I know more shlokas. Then we may bring many people because people like that, and they may learn many shlokas from Gita or whatever it is. But that's not our even object. There are so many Mayavadis who know so many shlokas from Gita, but they don't develop the mode of devotion. Rather, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, his policy, if someone came in, oh, very educated person, and I'd like to join the mat, go in the kitchen and wash the pots. And not one time, but for months. Because if you don't do that, then you're never going to get free from the ahamkar. And we see that many devotees, they're capable, they can do things. And they say, why are you making me? I can do much more than this. Wash the pots. Just wash the pots, that's good for you. So, if they don't, you see sometimes devotees, they join the temple full time and they're quite capable, and immediately they're given some responsibility. In almost every case, it destroys their bhakti. Because without learning the principle of submissive service, if they're immediately given some responsibility and some importance, then almost inevitably they become puffed up. So I don't know what else you're going to say, but I cut you out there because I'd rather, of course you may say, yes, very good for preaching, many people come in, but I would rather be cautious, conservative. It's better to err on the side of, it's better to be careful than to, there are many different things we could do, but we have to see what are the guidelines given by our Acharya also, given by Prabhupada. We've wholly neglected that Prabhupada didn't like competition. Of course, I had to investigate. There may have been some cases where he also allowed it, that may be also. But there's the well-known case of the Gita Bowl in which Prabhupada stopped it. On this line, on this premise, that bhakti is not had by becoming expert in answering questions on this. Because then you're taking Bhagavad Gita as something academic. We want to encourage devotees to study Shastra, but for the sake of main reason, for the sake of understanding what is Krishna consciousness and becoming purified. That is the main reason. we become purified by study. And also for preaching it is necessary. But in this idea, I will study and I will show myself I know so much. Then there's no bhakti. Krishna won't be pleased. We may get praise, oh, such a great speaker. But Krishna won't be pleased.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants that other competition like drawing competition. So it's also included in that same category.
Marginal. I mean, it's the same principle, isn't it? People like it. It maybe helps them to take an interest in Krishna. Maybe we should just give everyone a prize. But can we really say that someone's picture is... How can we say someone's picture is better than another's? That's ultimately for Krishna to decide whether he... what? That Krishna likes the devotion. We're judging with our material senses. This looks better than that. It's just like those first paintings in the Krishna book. They are very amateurish. But many of our devotees, including myself, I like them better than the modern paintings, which are much more expertly done. They're childish, okay, but they were done in a mood of great devotion. Prabhupada approved of them. Not only approved, he liked them.
Like this is an example where we were talking like we encourage the devotees to take up Krishna consciousness whatever level they can. At the same time, we have to maintain purity. So it goes against that example.
Right, that's what I said. Quality and quantity, the two things, both we want. But they, if we aim at quality, then we restrict the quantity. And if we aim at quantity, then quality goes to heaven.
So if there's some examples where we can understand that both can be, in what way they can be both restricted together?
Well, we have to discuss in individual cases. In general, we should preach very widely, ourselves maintain a very high standard, and be liberal with newcomers.
Liberal means
that we don't, in the beginning we encourage them to chant Hare Krishna, we don't insist that they rise early in the morning, just gradually bring them in. But by our example, they can see what is the highest standard. Gradually, the thing is that we should get them to hear, let them come and hear about Krishna. If they don't hear, they'll never advance.
But we don't encourage them in their wrong attitudes.
We don't encourage them. We may tolerate, but we don't encourage the wrong thing. And have them come and hear. And in a class, you can say anything. They'll gradually get the right idea. They should come and hear. That's actually why, of course, I'm giving a lot of examples from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because that's been my subject matter I've been intensely involved in for the last few months and years. But he was asked that, why are you building more mutts? There are already so many temples. He said, we need our own place so we can speak our own message. Because if we speak what we have to say in someone else's temple, they won't like it. They won't tolerate it. And another thing, he very much emphasized that household of devotees, they must come regularly and serve in the mutt and hear. They must hear, very important, they should hear. So we should, in the temples, we should have classes and very much encourage people to come to the classes and hear regularly what is the message of Krishna. And then you can understand what is Krishna consciousness. If we don't have a taste for hearing, then we can never properly chant, we can never properly serve. Chanting is incomplete without hearing, unless one is already on the liberated platform, which doesn't apply in almost every case. Hearing must be there and the speaking must be strictly to the point of Siddhanta. And it may be that not so many people come in the beginning. But we see just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how he was speaking, so uncompromised. His His speaking was difficult in two ways. One thing was difficult to understand, because his language and his concepts and his philosophy were all very difficult. Another thing, it was difficult for people to take, because it was smashing all the wrong ideas. But still, so many people came and became disciples and followers. So we have to see, there are different approaches in Krishna consciousness. There are different approaches. So my general outlook is that not putting water in the milk, rather boil the milk, boil it down. The thing is, if we go on putting more and more water, then gradually it becomes more like water than milk. It becomes, we don't see any difference. Just like we may think, well, you know, like these katakas, they so many people come because they speak in a very pleasing way. So we should also do the same thing. So many people come, and it may be effective in bringing many people, but then there's no difference between the professional speakers and us. So what's the point? What's the benefit? We bring many people, but we have to consider, what are we bringing them for? We do want to bring many people, but we have to be very clear in understanding, what are we bringing them for? Just to give a report that we had so many people coming, and to show we're a bigger institution than others, that's a totally mundane motive. We want to give them the real thing. There are already so many temples of Krishna. So unless our temples are places where people can come to a higher standard, where their lives can be changed and improved, then there's not that much point in having a temple at all. There should be a significant difference between ISKCON temples and other temples. The significant difference should be that we are educating, teaching, raising people to a higher level. Then, anything else? What else?
How to deal with other disciples, because their philosophy is
different. Their outlook is different. I hope their philosophy isn't different.
Sometimes
the philosophy is different. Well, we only have one philosophy, that is, which is coming from Krishna, then Brahma, Narada, Vyasa, we only have one philosophy. So if it's a different philosophy, then definitely there are problems. Definitely there are problems. Of course, even there may be different, in details even, there may be some different, even in philosophy there may be some different outlooks. That's also possible. Recently this question of Ramcharitmanas came up on the BBK Sangha. So it's a mixed thing, because Prabhupada himself even lectured on a verse from Ramcharitmanas once. But then on the other hand, he said that it's there's some Mayavad tinge there, or some non-devotional tinge. So actually, it shouldn't be such a big question for us. We don't give it's not our book. Our books are Gita, Bhagavat, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are the books we lecture in ISKCON. So we don't give, we shouldn't have Ramcharitmanas lectures. Valmiki Ramayana, because Prabhupada, he always said that this is the actual Ramayana. But then there may be scope for quoting sometimes also Ramcharitmanas, because Prabhupada himself did sometimes quote. Prabhupada sometimes quoted Chandracharya, Jiva Goswami quoted Chandracharya, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quoted Chandracharya. So it's not that everything is right. It's not that everything that everyone says is wrong. But their basic philosophy, we don't teach their philosophy, But if they say something that is right, we may quote it. But we have to ourselves be situated in Siddhanta to be able to do that. It's just like if you're preaching in Islamic countries, I was told by some devotees from Iran who I met, that if many people are interested, but they want to understand, well, how does this fit with Islam? And so unless someone knows Islam, the Quran, and the Hadith, and all these very well, it's very difficult to preach. I mean, difficult to actually convince people. If you can convince people that this is Islam, and then gradually maybe something more. It's not contradictory to Islam. So for most people that approach is required. So then you require detailed knowledge of that. So you may quote the Quran many times. It doesn't mean that we become Muslims. So, well, yes we are, in the real sense of the term. Islam means surrender. So in that sense, yes we are Muslims. But, well, the Ramcharitmanas, that's mostly of the Ramanandis. So we're not part of that Ramanandi samurai. But on the other hand, we are Ramanandis also, because we take pleasure in Ramante Yogino Nante Satyananda Chidamani Iti Ramapadena So Param Brahmavidhiyate. We are also worshippers of Lord Ram, who take pleasure in remembering Ram, Ramcharitmanas. So, but anyway, we're not part of that sampradaya. It's not really, we shouldn't start taking, although it started in Delhi now, our ISKCON devotees giving public lectures on Ramcharitmanas, but that's not really our subject matter. Yeah. Oh, you're Indian, so.
My question is that how to react to
something,
because I've been attending some lectures and this controversial point that Jiva was from the moon and all this. So it was made on under public. And then people asked me about the conversation.
People asked me also, I say that that different it seems to be a point that different people have different outlooks on. But and there are commands in Shastra which apparently support both positions, and Prabhupada said this, and I don't think that Prabhupada is cheating me. I accept what Prabhupada said. It's said that Prabhupada just said that to try for some time, place and circumstance thing, but there's no evidence that Prabhupada did say so out of time, place and circumstance thing, and that he was saying that this is the Siddhanta, so I accept that. And you can accept whatever you like. If you are, this is how I understand. You've asked me, this is what I understand. Someone else understands another way, well, they come back. From what as Prabhupada was our Acharya, he has, quoting Shastra, Krishna Bhuli Sai Jeevanadi Bahimo. And we have the story of the in the Puranjan section of Bhagavatam, in which it said, my old friend, you have forgotten me, and Brihad Bhagavatam. And there are so many evidences that the jiva was with Krishna. So, we can quote that also.
Should we attend
those? Well, is the whole lecture like hammering on the point that...
There's so many shops.
If you find it's a disturbance to your Krishna consciousness, then don't. It comes up in the lecture, you mean? Then you can say your questions and answers.
Ask to leave,
why? Because you quote Prabhupada?
Yes.
In which, can you give an instance in which someone's being told to leave the temple because they quote Prabhupada?
So many, take specific names.
You mean many people are being thrown out of Bombay temple for quoting Srila Prabhupada? Really? You know so many things I don't know. Maybe you're taking more interest in... Maybe you have more interest in that area. Dozens of people thrown out from ISKCON temples for stating that what Prabhupada states.
Yeah.
If that's a fact, it's extremely serious. All right, make a report, tell me. You have to give facts, figures, dates, names, places. No, if that's actually a fact, what you're saying, although I must say that many times you tell me things and then when I investigate it a bit, I find that your perspective on it is sometimes more bleak than the actual situation is. But if it's actually a fact, then it's something very serious and it should be taken up at institutional level. I'm willing to do it, I'm taking up so many, but how many things can I take up at institutional level? There are many things I'm already involved in. I'm known as somewhat of a maverick for that reason. But that's why I like to take up the major issues, very important. I don't take up everything, some things. Just like if any guru in our society speaks things which are actually complete nonsense, then I feel it's my duty. I mean, there is at least one case of a guru in our society who's distributing in various languages all over the world a book which is full of absolute nonsense. So, about flying saucers coming from the center of the earth and the world was formerly moved from Egypt, not from India. And so many funny things. So that's been taken up. I made a complaint to the DVC and they're taking it up. So that's something very serious if a guru is talking nonsense, because gurus are supposed to, every Vaishnava is supposed to talk about the guru, sadhu, and shastra, what to speak of the guru. So that's very serious, because if we don't say anything, that means it becomes accepted ISKCON teaching. If someone's talking things which is not according to Guru Sadhu Shastra, and we don't say anything against it, that means we accept it. Monam Samati Lakshanam. This is an example of something very serious. So if something's less serious, then there are so many things. So I'm not taking up on an institutional level things which are less serious. But if, as you say, there are many people being removed from ISKCON temples for asking about or protesting it or bringing up the philosophical point that Prabhupada upheld the shastrically upholdable version, it wasn't Prabhupada's imagination, that the jiva is originally with Krishna, then that's something serious. So make a report and I'll take it up. Okay, anything else? And then I'm going to close the session and we'll release on headshot.
Father, you said that devotee should be married to devotees, other devotees of
best. In some cases they marry a non-devotee and then the non-devotee becomes a devotee. There are some very nice instances of that. But it's more of a risk. Definitely it's a risk.
So is it possible that
I don't think temples should do it. I think the grihasthas themselves should do it. Yeah, congregational devotees. Is it possible? Not is it possible. It should and must be done. Now you have also crossed that side of the fence. No, it's actually taking a responsible position. You have to take this, it's a social position. In the name of being a brahmachari, people are often they're like irresponsible people. They just do a little service, not very seriously, and they eat and sleep. It's irresponsible. Such people should be married. They should take responsibility. Everyone should be responsibility. Saffron cloth is not meant to be an excuse for being a lout, a parasite. One in saffron cloth should be very seriously endeavoring in devotional service. And then, otherwise, why should they be supported by society? So now you've taken that decision, you've ended family life, and you yourself are new in that, but due to lack of others, you could help to take up that responsibility of helping others who are going that way. It's better if they are more senior in age also than yourself. So, well, we have, but the Rupa Goswami is there, but he's so old, he shouldn't have any, he himself also shouldn't have anything to his family. He should be on the other side. Cross the first fence, and now you have to cross. One has to enter family life to prepare himself to come out the other side. You do your duty, and you come out the other side. That's how it's supposed to be. So, probably better you're not involved. You should be going for Dham Das. That would be better. Maybe like Kashyap Prabhu, his brother, this age group. Better.
There were a lot of posts from transmitted by in recent years. Many posts from transmitted by. So, devotees now they were that if anything which is not written specifically by Prabhupada, not specifically by Prabhupada himself, you know, that is not as bona fide as what
Prabhupada
said.
It's the Quran and the Hadith, isn't it?
How do we make a distinction between them?
Well, this is quite a complex epistemological question, or hermeneutical question, I guess you could say also. Epistemology is the branch of philosophy that deals with how do we know anything? On what grounds can we accept anything as knowledge? And hermeneutics is it means the science of scriptural interpretation. Transcendental Diary, I would say it's pretty good because it was recorded faithfully at that time. Of course, you may say that's Harishoy Prabhu's own outlook on it, but I don't feel that he's personally trying to give his own. He's just trying to present Prabhupada as it is, and I think he does a pretty good job of it. Now, even what Prabhupada says, that also goes through the filter of our own consciousness. So the real thing is that we should hear, even what Prabhupada says, we also have to hear from sadhus. That's the traditional system. It's not that we just read Shastra or we read books and then that's it. But we're also supposed to hear from sadhus who themselves are supposed to be Titeite Korea Oikya, with the instructions that their heart is supposed to be one with that which they've heard from their guru. And they, with faith in that principle, one should hear from sadhus and understand in this way. That is the same. Even reading ourselves, we'll find in Prabhupada's books there's so many apparently contradictory statements. And in Shastra itself, just like this fall or non-fall of the jiva, there are pramans on both sides. And even different acharyas say different things, so it can become very complex. Therefore, one is enjoined to tasmad guru, well actually not for that reason, one is supposed to approach a guru, but yasya deve parabhakte yata deve tata guru tasyaite kate saraya tapa kaushante mahatmana. One should When there are difficult questions, recondite questions, then from Shastra, even from Prabhupada's teachings, then we should consult Guru, not simply try to understand it all with our own brain power. Of course, you may say that the Guru is not that available, or maybe myself, I may have sometimes ambivalent opinions on different issues also. As Prabhupada himself did. It's not that everything is black and white. Just like Prabhupada, he would say, no more sannyasis. And sannyasis not understand it. We stop. And then himself would give sannyas initiation. We don't need to open any more temples. Just leave. And then himself would open more temples. So, the absolute truth is not necessarily something that we can always understand with logic. In fact, the wholly logical approach to understanding the absolute truth is rejected in Shastra. Although logic is used to understand the absolute truth to a certain level, but on the other hand, the achintya kaluye bhavanatam tarkena yojayat prakriti viparinyachita, that achintya lakshanam, the very symptom of that which is inconceivable is that it cannot be conceived, it cannot be understood by logic and argument. Therefore, the attempt to do so is not recommended. Okay, I'm going to finish then because time up. I said 1 o'clock, but I want to get my head shaved and maybe be on time for lunch today. We can continue with discussion. This is good this afternoon. I was thinking of maybe some practical things, how to increase our preaching, but it can be on these different. Naturally, the philosophical perspective also comes in. Everything we do should be. We should be ruled by Shastra. Shastra means. There's two kinds. There's Astra, if we're ruled by sticks, that's discipline. That we should voluntarily accept the ruling of Shastra. That is, a Brahmana is not ruled by the king, who rules others by the force of his hands, because the Brahmana is self-disciplined, according to Shastra. He doesn't need the external discipline, because he's fixed in proper philosophical understanding from Shastra. So, 4:30, we can meet again. And tomorrow we're supposed to go to the station at 4:30.